Blog Talk Radio. The views expressed on Talk Real Solutions, hosted by Tyrone Thompson at TalkRealSolutions.com, are the views of Tyrone Thompson and do not reflect the views of TalkRealSolutions.com, YouTube, or etc. The content here belongs to Talk Real Solutions and its many contributors. Views and opinions expressed by all contributors belong to them and not TalkRealSolutions.com or Tyrone Thompson, the host, or etc. All data and information provided on the site is for informational purposes only. Talk Real Solutions makes no representation as to accuracy, completeness, correctness, suitability, or validity of any information on this site and will not be liable for any errors, omissions, or delays in this information or any losses, injuries, or damages arising from its display or use. All information is provided on an as-is basis.
Brown and Dr. Benjamin Chavis, who was part of Remington Penn, is the CEO and president of Black Press USA. He was once the CEO and president of the NAACP. They put all of their efforts to be at that courthouse covering both trials in 2017, where we had a hung jury in Montgomery County, Pennsylvania, the largest county in Pennsylvania, where we had a hung jury. The jury deliberated for over 50-plus hours, the longest deliberation in the history of Montgomery County. And then we got a hung jury. Then 2018, they were there. I remember having an interview with Tom Joyner, Steve Harvey, Roland Martin. They were not there. Media, and you have to remember, they are controlled by white people. They have shows, and they call them black shows, but it's not controlled by them. They're controlled by white people. White people say, look, we're not going to let you be there to put the truth out to the black community of what went on in the trial. So, you know, saying all of that, I just thank you, ABC. I thank you, Oshawa, for having me on, and Mr. Thompson, for us to get the truth and facts. We never asked for any special favors. As Mr. Cosby said to me today, I spoke with him over 6 or 7 hours ago. He called me from prison. I mean, back-to-back twice, and he said, Andrew, he said, they want to say black people created the race car, but the race car was not created by us. It was created when they put us on a slave ship and brought us to this country and made us property. It was created when they left the amendments out of the Constitution that was created in 1776. We didn't create the race car. They created the race car, but they want to say that we're playing the race car. Not true. So he was excited that I was doing your show, and I just really thank you from the bottom of my heart for having me on. Thank you.
Yeah.
Right on.
ABC, you get started with the first question?
Yeah, absolutely. So I've just got about 4 questions for you, brother. And these are basic ones, really not too much to do with the trial. I wanted to start off with Hannibal Buress. Do you have anything to say about this person? Does Mr. Cosby, particularly, does he know the man? Does he have anything to say about the man? What does he think about this guy who, from what I understand, was kind of the genesis of, you know, him mentioning Mr. Cosby and making this supposed joke is what kicked off everything?
Mr. Cosby, words for Hannibal Buress and my words are Judas. We never heard of him, never knew of the guy. We found out through our investigation and the investigation that they did when these allegations first surfaced and when Hannibal Buress made that joke. The Philadelphia magazine that's controlled by a guy named Bob Huber. Bob Huber has never liked Mr. Cosby. He's a well-known journalist out of Philadelphia, and he wrote an article, What It's Like to Be a White Man in Philadelphia. He was upset, and he stalked Mr. Cosby for a number of years, and Mr. Cosby refused to give him an interview. So what they did, the Philadelphia Magazine, they paid Hannibal Buress. They heard he was having a comedy show in Philadelphia. I forget the comedy theater that he was at. And the Philadelphia Magazine paid him to do a joke about Mr. Bill Cosby being a rapist. He did the joke on the first show. No one caught it. So Philadelphia Magazine came back to him. They knew he had two shows that night, and they said, hey, we need you to do the joke again and call Bill Cosby a rapist. We're going to have an employee of ours, a freelance reporter, in the audience. He's going to record it. He's going to put it on social media. And we want to disclose to the world who he is and that he raped white women. So Hannibal Buress took the case, and he went on stage the second time and did the joke. And Philadelphia Magazine, because they have a huge platform and they have a huge social media following, they put it out on social media. And it caught like a fire. It was like someone striking a match in a forest that had not seen rain in 3 years. And it took off and became an inferno.
That's insane. You know, and it's almost as insane that we never heard this. At least I haven't heard it before. You know, those people should be investigated. That's crazy.
It happened. It's the truth. It's happened, and that's why you saw Hannibal Buress, who was a no-name comic. No one ever heard of him. Black guy. All of a sudden, he was getting shows. He was on the Tonight Show.
Right.
But look at his flame. He was living in New York, and then he had to leave New York and move back to Chicago. You haven't heard from him since that time because he was used. He was
right.
used to, like they have always used black people. Look what they did in slavery. They used us to put our own people in captivity for sugar and rum. And so it's nothing new. This is nothing new. We've always seen this picture. You know, this is not a new picture. And they use this black man saying, if you do this, we're going to give you all of the great opportunities. You're going to be the biggest comic in the world. You're going to have all of these TV shows. He did it to take down one of the greatest icons of our history, our icon, black people, color people, our icon, for a piece of silver. So he's
our Judas.
He's our Judas of the 21st century.
Well, look, brother, I mean, wow, that in itself is a longer conversation, but I want to try to get these in and let Joshua take over. Wow, what a story, though. Another question. You know, we've had this discussion here on TRS, but it's been a discussion over social media about Mr. Cosby wanting to purchase NBC in the past, and some of us think that was something that drew the ire the concern of the elite or the powerful or the powerful white folks, that they don't want a black man having that kind of power of a mainstream media station. And I subscribe to that. I recall when the talk was about him wanting to purchase NBC, and they wouldn't let him purchase it. You know, what do you guys say about that? Does Mr. Cosby think this has anything to do with the attacks against him or the desire to take him down? Is that he was too powerful as a black man?
It has a lot to do with it. Think about it. It's like being going on a drug dealer's, the kingpin block. Well, Mr. Cosby tried to go on the block of the Jewish people. He wanted to buy a network. Not only did he want to buy NBC that same year, he wanted to buy the Cleveland Browns. What people don't realize is Mr. Cosby was drafted by the Cleveland Browns to play football. Mr. Cosby decided to become a drummer, and he was a drummer, and he lettered at Temple University, where he was a big-time football player there. And he tried to buy both entities at the same year. So what NBC did, they brought in Magic Johnson and P. Diddy, and gave them the Spy Channel to prevent Bill Cosby from buying the network. Keep in mind, NBC, Bill Cosby saved NBC from bankruptcy 7 times. He saved William Morris when his top agent, Norman Brokaw, was the biggest agent at William Morris. He saved them from bankruptcy over 7 times. So, you know, you go on these people blocks. It's just like in a drug game. They said, don't deal on my block. Well, you're a black man. We created you. We gave you all of this wealth, and you're going to come back and use this wealth to buy a network You know, when you're trying to buy a major network, a mainstream media network, as we see today, media has the juice. It controls the mind of the masses. They did not want to see that happen, so they railroaded him, and they used Magic and P. Diddy, who fell for the bait, to give them their spy channel to stop Bill Cosby from owning the network. That's the history behind it. That's the truth, the facts.
Wow. You know, and I've heard people try to argue that he didn't really even have the money. He couldn't have did it. But I don't want to stay on that because I got to have some other questions. Pound cake speech. You know, so we have, and I'm sure you're aware of this, there's a portion of our community, the black community, there's a lot of black folk who, you know, when this whole thing came down and Mr. Cosby was being arrested and he was charged and all this different kind of stuff, we had a number of black folk even calling into TRS, but in social media, that number one said that he did it, he even admitted to it, all this different kind of stuff. But another thing that you would hear in that conversation is, you know, he never was about, that's what he gets for talking down to black people, and he was, you know, all in the news, you know, telling black people to do this and you ain't doing right, and, you know, what do you call it, chastising black folks and all this stuff. What do you get? You know, he's talking down to black people. That's what he gets. And they mentioned the pound cake speech. Any comments, thoughts about that? And does Mr. Cosby think that that at all, you know, affects his relationship with the black community?
Well, you know, we talked about that during my last visit with him before COVID-19 struck. I visited with him on March 5th, 6th, and 7th. I'm his only visitor. And he said, Andrew, that speech was probably for the wrong audience. But what, he still stands behind it because I was just trying to uplift our people. I was trying to tell our people that, trying to express to them the power that they have as black people, trying to say to them, don't let white people make you victims. You have the ability to become entrepreneurs. You have the ability to not stand on the corner, because if you're on the corner and you're standing there, you have a great possibility of being in the picture. And if you're in the picture, you can be framed. However, black people took it in a negative route, saying that he was airing their dirty laundry. But as he said today, he said, you know what, Andrew, sitting in here in NCI Phoenix Institution, a level 5 maximum security prison that they put him in Collegeville, Pennsylvania, he said, you know what, now we all have dirty laundry together. We have it together, and we can have a more informative to this discussion. And I'm going to continue on trying to incite our people to be better, incite our people to be better fathers, be better mothers, to take our communities over and start our own businesses. He said we do have the potential, and that's what the pound cake speech was about, having the potential to be the Black Wall Street of 1921. And we should all want to be the Black Wall Street of 1921, because it's in us. We are the Israelites. We are the people of Moses. We are the 5 books of Moses that gave us the strength and the commandments. What God wanted us to be great people, because he made us great. And he stands behind that.
Right on, and I'm with that too. The last question I have, and then Yashua, if you want to go ahead and take it over, is the Me Too movement. You know, I think it may have been after this whole thing came down and Mr. Cosby was being charged and everything that I spoke on it on my show. But if it wasn't exactly then, it was sometime shortly after, because the Me Too movement was all over the place. You know, you saw that hashtag Me Too, and this kind of thing. And at the time, you know, I said that there was something going on with this movement as far as, you know, basically it was an attack on manhood, is the way I saw it. But the point I want to bring up is that it appears that Mr. Cosby was very much used to propel the Me Too movement into the spotlight and give them a voice, but also recognition. And it seems to have since then become even a bigger thing over time. Any thoughts, and does Mr. Cosby have any thoughts or anything to say about this Me Too movement and how they impacted him?
Look, it's a movement that's a one-sided movement. It's a movement that doesn't represent truth. It's a movement that is not the representation of all women. You know, the hashtag MeToo movement was started by Tawana Burke, a black woman out of Brooklyn, New York, who had a promiscuous lifestyle, who was a member of gangs and all kinds of stuff. But the MeToo movement, because they said that she wasn't attractive enough and she was black, that they had to become the Becky movement. So the Becky movement became the Me Too movement, which is the white woman movement. And, you know, it's a movement that says that women don't lie, but white women don't lie. When white women accuse you of something, it must be true. If a black woman accuses you of anything, it's not true. You can't believe black women. Since when has America cared for black women or black girls? Never. Since when have we always said that? Tell me, where is it located that women don't lie, that women always tell the truth? All women are not liars. All men are not liars. But the Me Too movement says that, you know, all women must be believed because they're women. And you know, that's an inaccuracy, and that's not factual. And that's a plague. That's no different than the plague of COVID-19 that discriminate against one race. You know, first and foremost, they said COVID-19 didn't discriminate. They said it only affected everybody. Now we're hearing that, hey, it affects more black people, elderly black people. The same thing as the Me Too movement. It doesn't affect white men. Look at Matt Lauer. Look at all the men that have been accused. Harvey Weinstein, you never saw one woman out there, the plethora of women out there going against Harvey Weinstein or all those white men that have been accused. It is the plague of black men. It's the movement to take down black men. Yet again, Tawana Burke is no different than Hannibal Buress. Using her tools, her thoughts, her brain, her strength to take down her own. And that's what the Me Too myth will be, will always be, because if it was really about all women, let's see you go Me Too, go back into slavery. Let's see you remove George Washington's name from buildings, Andrew Jackson's name from buildings, who owned slaves and raped slaves on a daily basis. If you're truly about women, so the Me Too movement would never be about all women. It's not an inclusive movement. It's the Becky movement. And if a white woman says that a black man did it, it's the new form. It's the 21st century form of lynching. You know, they have brought lynching back without legalizing it through our governments. They've legalized lynching through our movement, through a movement called Me Too.
Wow. All right. Appreciate it, brother. Joshua, you can take it over.
I just want to start day one, Mr. Wyatt. Day one inside the trial. What happened? Just give us a overview of what the judge's perception of what was going on, the judge, the lawyers on both sides, and what was going on in the mind of Cosby. Because, you know, is what I want to know, what was actually going on inside this trial, because that makes me go, you know, like, okay. So just start from day one and kind of give us a view of what was going on inside that trial with both sides, the defense and the prosecution, then that judge.
Well, first of all, Mr. Cosby in 2005 was given a deal. He was given a deal. These allegations came forward by a young lady that he was having an affair with, Andrea Constant. Andrea Constant, before she became an employee of Temple, she was a basketball player at the University of Arizona. At that time, while in Arizona, she had entered into an affair with Steve Nash, who was the all-star NBA player for the Phoenix Suns. She gets a job at Temple University. She's introduced to Bill Cosby by a well-known, trustworthy trustee of the University of Temple. Mr. Cosby took to her. They formulated a relationship. Mr. Cosby, she's from Toronto, Canada. Mr. Cosby was giving her a lot of attention. She called him over 170-plus times. He called her maybe 70 times, returned her calls. He had dinner with her family members. They met with him in Toronto after one of his shows. And, you know, the relationship took its form. She came to his Philadelphia home several times. She came to a number of his events in Connecticut. She even slept in the same bed with Mr. Cosby. So after spending time with Mr. Cosby, he felt that this woman, this employee with Temple University, Andrea Constant, wasn't really trying to progress. And he became tired of her. He became tired of her excuses. And she told him that she wanted to be a sports journalist. So he reached out to Dick Ebersol and reached out to him and said, hey, look, you got the Olympics going on in I forget the country, but in Greece. And he said, look, consider her to be a journalist, test her out. But she did a horrible job. And so Mr. Cosby started disconnecting himself from her. Well, after the disconnect happened, he waited a year later. He had a comedy show in Toronto, Canada. She reached out to him. She heard about the show. He returned the call. She said, my mother, my father, and my siblings and other family members would like to meet you. And he said, okay. Well, when the show happened, Mr. Cosby, he left the building like Elvis. He did not feel like having a meeting. And the mother, her mother, purchased him a T-shirt. And, of course, you know, he did not get to receive a T-shirt from the mother. Then a year later, Andrea Constant comes out and says that, you know, he did something to me. And, I feel like he drugged and raped me. Well, you know, she gave different accounts of alleged assault to five different law enforcement agencies. She gave it to the Durham Police in Canada, Toronto Police. She gave it to three law enforcement agencies in Philadelphia. Her accusations and accounts of what happened were so egregious that they said, look, we don't have a case here. So the district attorney at the time, Bruce Castor, in 2005, said, look, your accounts don't add up. Everything you're saying, it's not factual. It's not adding up. They met with Mr. Cosby. They did not have to have a warrant. He gave them permission to search his home. And they said, well, we would like to meet with him. So he went to his attorney's office in New York. They drove over to New York City from Pennsylvania. Other detectives, they met with him for hours. And he said, look, all I gave her, she told me she was having trouble sleeping. I gave her a Benadryl because that's what I take when I want to go to sleep. And they said, well, did you have sexual contact with her? So, look, I fingered her, digital penetration. I gave her, she had been to my house 7 times. I fingered her. I did not penetrate her. After fingering her, she had an orgasm. I said, rest and go to sleep. I'm going to go upstairs. This happened in the Pennsylvania home. She, then the district attorney at the time, Bruce Castor, said, you know what? Everything she's telling us is not truthful. So what he did, he said, look, I want to get this guy who was on the witness stand doing pretrial hearings. He said, I want to get him, but I didn't have anything to get him on criminal charges. So what he did, he sent her to civil court. He forced Mr. Cosby to go through a civil deposition through civil court in the federal courts and said, basically, look, I'm going to make you a wealthy woman to the tune of $3.8 million. And they settled out for $3.8 million. Well, years later, here we are, the district attorney, the present district attorney, Kevin Steele, runs a Willie Horton-style campaign ad and says, if you elect me, I'll bring Bill Cosby to justice. Well, keep in mind, when you heard the women, all those women that they brought out, they kept saying quaaludes. They already had the roadmap from his deposition in 2005. Gloria already knew what to say. She knew how to coach the women. So it wasn't any newfound information. Dolores Troiani, who was Andrea Constant's attorney during the deposition, and Mr. Cosby waived his Fifth Amendment rights and spoke freely. Basically, they talked about a culture in the 70s of quaaludes. Keep in mind, quaaludes were not made after 1982. incident happened in 2005. So they kept saying he was giving women quaaludes. He was doing all these horrendous things against women, drugging them, raping them. He, in his deposition, they asked Mr. Cosby, did you give women drugs for sex? He said no. He said, they said, well, what about quaaludes? He said, well, it was a thing that the young people liked to party with in the 70s, and we all had them in 1970. Mr. Cosby, keep in mind, was 30-something years old in the 70s. So forward to this time now when the current district attorney say, if you arrest me, I'll bring Bill Cosby to justice. He already had the information, the notes from Troy Annie's deposition. So that's how they were able to fuel this fire against him. So we get into the first trial where they bring one woman out, Kelly Johnson, to assist Andrea Constant because her accounts cannot stand on their own for a trial. So the judge at the time, the judge for both trials, Stephen T. O'Neill, also who we found out, the judge was also his wife was a sexual assault professor at University of Penn, who's still a sexual assault professor there at University of Pennsylvania, who helped get Mr. Cosby's honorary degrees rescinded, was working with these rape organizations. He helped tear his wife out on her dissertation on sexual assault. So they had the roadmap. They had all of the information to go after him. This was the greatest Ocean 11 extortion campaign against Mr. Cosby. And they were able to feel it. And that's how we got to this point.
Bill Cosby and his judge, I know he, is it true that he had worked with this judge? He thought the judge wasn't fair during the trial? But
correct. We asked the judge to recuse himself three times. The judge found out that his wife, he worked on her dissertation, and she was and had become a member of these sexual assault organizations. He should have recused himself. We found out that Bruce Castor, who gave Mr. Cosby the deal, said we would never prosecute you, you weigh your Fifth Amendment rights. Bruce Castor ran against Judge O'Neill for district attorney in 05. He beat O'Neill, and the way he beat O'Neill was because O'Neill was having an affair with his assistant district attorney. He ratted O'Neill out. So he had a grudge that was pending from 2005. So when we found out about that, we did a motion. We did a number of motions actually, and the judge recused himself. He refused to recuse himself. Even in the second trial, juror number 11, a white guy, before the jury started doing jury selection, voir dire, he said, this guy's guilty. Let's go on and convict him guilty and go about our day. We had a hearing on it. Judge O'Neill asked the juror, did he say that? He said, I don't recall. Judge O'Neill said, you know what? He said, I don't recall. I'm going to let him stay as a juror, as one of the jurors. So it was already planned. Mm-hmm. They had already structured it. He was the hanging judge. It was no way, no matter what attorney we had, it was no way we was going to win the second trial. Look, the first trial, the jurors had all went into deliberation and found Mr. Cosby not guilty. The judge said, no, you're going to go back. You're going to go back and deliberate more. He made those people deliberate for 50-plus hours, the longest deliberation in the first trial in Montgomery County history, and that's how we got a hung jury. We talked. Our attorneys and investigators met with the jury foreperson, and what she said to us, she said, look, this judge first started feeding us good food. All of a sudden, he started feeding us Strombolis, more older people. One person, blood pressure strike. He was trying to wear us down. He moved us out of a massive conference room and put us in a small conference room where we started fighting each other. They said the jury was going to be sequestered. They had access to cell phones. computers, they were able to go out to Target shopping. She said, the jury foreperson told us, she said, look, be careful of millennials. They don't want to read anything. They started pulling out their cell phones, researching Bill Cosby and what was being said in the news. It was all a setup. It was a setup.
So with that being said, so did I understand that the jury was what? Was it mostly women or mostly men or mostly white women or what? What was the jury consist of?
The jury makeup in the first trial, we had mostly women, but we had mostly elderly people. We had one black person. The jury makeup in the second trial, we had two black people, even a Muslim guy. His family called him and said, look, during the trial, we found out through our investigators, hey, man, hey, find him guilty and get the book deal. You know, it was horrendous what happened. I was there every step of the way. And that's why Mrs. Cosby, when Mr. Cosby was found guilty, she got in the car and with a driver and went to Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, which is the capital, and filed a complaint against Judge Stephen T. O'Neill with the Judicial Conduct Board. They still have, after 2 years, they normally give their findings if the judge was in violation. And they normally get their findings within 6 months. We've been waiting for 2 years now.
Yeah.
So it was all a setup. You know,
right.
Keep in mind, and let me remind your listening audience, the halo of America's dad was put on Bill Cosby's head by white people, English people, who control Hollywood, control everything. He never put that halo over his head. But what they could not do is let a black man, Bill Cosby, leave this earth. He'll be 83 years old on July 12th as America's dad, as the dad of every white boy, white girl, brown, colored person, Asian in America, in the world. And they're never going to let a black man leave here unscathed.
Right. While she's on my mind, I think her name is Beverly Johnson, the former model.
Right.
Now, is she in the dropping her charges against Bill because she also made the allegation?
Well, she was paid. Beverly had money. Beverly was paid $20,000. She was almost about to file bankruptcy. And she claims, I saw him in the airport later after I came forward, and he looked at me. Well, Mr. Cosby had never been to the airport. He has private planes. And he's blind, 100% blind due to glaucoma. She made it all up. She said, well, I never want to talk about it again. Well, if it really happened to you, a true victim would want to talk about it. The reason why they brought Beverly Johnson and a few other black women out, I always say that they put out a lot of salt in the salt shaker. They had to mix with black pepper in it to make it believable.
Yeah.
Because it's racially motivated. So why not get Beverly Johnson, who is considered America's black supermodel, to say something? And you know, it will be believed.
Right.
Go ahead.
And just the thing too, that they tried the same thing with Morgan Freeman, but that black woman, she flipped the script on him. Told him, she said, what he said to me didn't offend me at all. And so I thought that that was interesting too, how they always try to use black women. And this black woman, she flipped the script on and said, I didn't appreciate this woman saying that he did something to me when that's not what I said. So I kind of wanted to say that because they did the same thing with the banker woman. I forgot this woman's name. But she came out and she defended Morgan Freeman. She said, no. He said that I had a nice dress. He liked my dress or something like that. She said that was not offensive to me. She said, so why would this woman say something for me when I can speak for myself? And she made that clear, and they kind of left Morgan Freeman alone. And so
They left Morgan Freeman alone. You got to understand why. William Morris Endeavor is ran by R.E. Emanuel. His brother, Rahm Emanuel, who's the chief of staff to President Obama. Their other brother, the other Emanuel brother, is the one that wrote and constructed Obamacare. R.E. controls every entertainer in the world for William Morris Endeavors. Mr. Cosby had been there for 50 years. He decided to leave. R.E. was at CAA. Mr. Cosby was at CAA, Creative Arts Agency. R.E. left CAA and took Oprah with him. He was so pissed off. William Morris had all of the accounts of Mr. Cosby's life. And when Obama came to Mr. Cosby in 2008 and said, hey, I want you to support me and endorse me, remember, they have always said that the Cosby Show is what got Obama elected. It was that generation. Mr. Cosby told President Obama, he said, look, you don't want me out. I just settled this case in 2005 with this woman for $2.8 million. I don't want to bring anything negative to you. Michelle Obama used to call the house all the time. Well, when Mr. Cosby left William Morris, Ari became bitter. We had a new TV show coming out in 2015 through CAA. Ari became bitter, and that's how the allegations started.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're dealing with a lot of Jewish people who control everything. And when you're a black man, you have the largest African-American art collection, one of the largest African-American art collections in the world. And the only way you get to see it is if you're invited to one of the homes. You're a threat. When you become a black man, you own the rights to your works, your body of work, Fat Albert, Cosby Show. You're a threat. When you are not cash poor, you're cash wealthy, an asset wealthy, you're a threat. Right. You know, this is a man who started the Black Stuntman's Association, Bill Cosby, because he saw a white man being painted down in I Spy.
Mm.
Okay, this is the same man who put up $1 million of his own personal money to get black people as wardrobe stylists and hairstylists in Hollywood in 1970s. This is the same black man who became the pioneer of HBCUs. No one thought or cared about HBCUs until he started wearing their shirts. So when you see Netflix giving $40 million to Morehouse and $40 million to Spelman and $40 million to the UNCO, that was Bill Cosby's doing. He was the pioneer of it. Bill Cosby was the pioneer of putting black people to work before there was a Tyler Perry or Oprah. Oprah used to spend time, her and Stedman, at the Massachusetts property. And Bill Cosby, Mrs. Cosby gave Oprah her very first interview to launch O Magazine.
Right,
Mrs. Cosby
right.
owned 50%. See, when you're black people and you're trying to incite in the spirit of black people, entrepreneurship and greatness, you become a threat. And that's why we're here today. But as I've always said, and I will continue to say, Bill Cosby in prison is they got what they wanted, but they gave us what we needed. Because this is so much bigger than Bill Cosby. You know, Al Sharpton does a eulogy, but I like to eulogize living. He does a eulogy and say, hey, the cops have always, they put our knee on the neck. Well, they've been putting the knee on the neck of black people for centuries, for 401 years. Bill Cosby was trying to get that knee removed in a different way, in a different way from marching. As John Hope and Henry Clark always said, marching just wears out good leather soles. It's about action. It's about investing into yourself, investing into your community.
Right.
And
that's a
great. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, Mr. Watt. And somebody I want to do before we get to the phones. What was the, and I've always thought about this too, what was the Playboy Mansion on this? What was Bill Cosby's relationship with Hugh Hefner? You know, because I do know when this really started to take its hold on Bill, that Hugh kind of got out of Dodge for a while. He kind of he lost the mansion, I think. He stole it. He moved on. And then shortly after, he, I think he passed away a couple years later or something like that. Is there a connection?
Who helped him call Mr. Cosby and say, look, Mr. Cosby would call all his friends and say, look, I don't want to bring you into this. He helped her, you know, up in age. He sold the Playboy Mansion, but they worked out a deal where he would live in the Playboy Mansion until he passed away, and he did so. But yet again, white people protecting their own. They protected Hugh Hefner. This is about Bill Cosby. You know, mm-hmm. You're a guy. You in 1970, Mrs. Cosby bought a home in Shelburne, Massachusetts. They own half of the town, 20,000 acres. It's a primary residence. You have a house in Pacific Palisades next to Steven Spielberg. You bought them in the '80s. You have two houses on the upper east side of Manhattan, 61st Street, next to Valerie Simpson, Ashford Simpson, that you hadn't lived in almost 30 years. You have another house on 71st Street that was a French school. You purchased that house, the hottest block on the upper east side of Manhattan. You sold one house to the Japanese embassy. You have a house in Elkins Park, Philadelphia. You know, when you own land, that's wealth. When you own yourself, that's wealth. And keep in mind that Bill Cosby was on Nixon's enemy list because he refused to perform at the White House for Nixon. He was being watched by the FBI 30-plus years ago. Now, how can a man on the FBI list, enemies list, Nixon's enemies list, being watched daily by the FBI, comedy shows being canceled, or he's been harassed? How can you tell me that this guy, a black man in the 60s and 70s, is raping white women? Impossible.
Right. And that's what they all, I mean, it, to me, the way I look at it, this is what they always do. You know, they had, you know, Reginald Lewis' phone tapped to her. They had his phone tapped to her, and he was just a businessman. So, you know, so it doesn't surprise me. And like you said earlier, there's been a lot of white males who were also, you know, Brian Singer, I think his name is Springer. He was raping boys, and no one said nothing about him. You go, Harvey Weinstein, to me, the way I look at it, he was just more of the fall guy. They had to get him to prove that this thing with Bill wasn't a race thing. So I think that was
correct.
That was about
correct. Right. About two years prior with Harvey Weinstein, every actress that accused him of raping them, of doing whatever to them, got on stage and thanked him for getting an Oscar.
Right.
So yeah. You know, you always have to have someone to be the fall guy. And that's what happened to Bill Cosby. You know, Harvey Weinstein, they came after him. Look, he was a tough businessman. He was a guy, no-nonsense guy. But all I can say is grown women know when a man invites you to his hotel room and you're 30 years old, you know what that's all about. Since men have women, you know, they have become at 30 years old, they're like children. They don't know any better. They knew what they were doing. You know, but when money is involved, as I said, money is the root of all evil, you will make up whatever you need to make up to keep your name in the spotlight. You know, whether it was another 15 minutes of fame or was it longevity famous, miss for these people. That's what they did. They took advantage of it. So, you know, we have to understand, I tell these guys today, these black guys, up-and-coming athletes and entertainers, be careful. Be careful out here. Because, you know, you can be in a club, a crowded club, and you can try to squeeze through a spot and touch a woman's butt or breast by accident. But she can say that you sexual assaulted her.
Right.
You know,
right.
We, you know, this culture, this mob culture that has been created to say that a woman just can say it happened and she must be believed, it affects our due process. It can scorn a man for the rest of his life. Right. But you know what women say now is, look, even if the woman lied and they found out she lied, a man can repair himself. That's impossible. It's impossible to repair yourself when the media, the minute you're accused of it, the police department puts out a mugshot and your name goes into the various media outlets.
Mm-hmm.
You can't repair yourself from that. It's impossible.
Right.
Our goal right now, what we're thankful for, is that almost a week or so ago, the state Supreme Court of Pennsylvania agreed to review Mr. Cosby's appeal on the merits that we brought up as issues, the fact that the 404B witnesses, the prior bad acts, those women like Janet Dickinson who got on the witness stand and said, yeah, I wrote a book saying that I went to Bill Cosby's hotel room in Lake Tahoe, knocked on his door, and asked him to have sex with me. He blew me off. I took two Quaaludes, drank a bottle of wine, and went to sleep. She said, well, oh, it's called poetic licensing. I lied to get the money. Another lady, Janice Baker Kinney, stated during the trial, my friend and I, we like massive black men. I did LSD, I did coke, heroin. I shot up. I can't say that Bill Cosby raped me. I believe it happened because I was sore afterwards. Another lady, Heidi Thomas, during the trial, she comes out to Reno. She said, I was walking around after he raped me. They said, well, ma'am, why do you have all these beautiful pictures of swans? She said, well, after he raped me, I told the chef to bring me some food, and I decided to walk around the property and take pictures. In Lake Tahoe at the time she was taking pictures, we looked at the time, it was 30 degrees, 40 degrees.
And then she not only did that, she found out he was doing a show in St. Louis. They said, well, why did you fly out to his show and you kept all of these pictures? I went out there to confront him. Well, ma'am, you're shown in the picture smiling. Your hand is around his waist. I was afraid.
Mm.
Yeah. Wow. White women. Let's go back. Let's not forget. Let's not forget history. We have to always go back to history, and we have to remember that history is not repeating itself. It never went away. Emmett Till, white woman, Cara Dunham, comes out 3 years ago, 80-plus years old. I lied because now I want to tell the truth because I'm old and I'm dying and I want God to forgive me for my sins.
Hmm.
She had these black boy lips. June 1st, 1921, Tulsa, Oklahoma, Black Wall Street, Greenwood District. Black men from World War I, white woman, who Sarah Page tells a guy, Dick Rollins, they had been seeing each other. She would sneak over to the Greenwood District and spend time with him. He was a shoe shine guy. He saw her in an elevator, and he wanted to ask her why she was ignoring him and wouldn't speak to him. He confronts her in the elevator. She screams, he's hurting me. A riot ensues, destroys the richest black district in the history of America.
Right.
They dump the body into graves. We're not new to this type of environment. Well, white women would deal with us. They would sleep with black men. But when we don't give them opportunities or we decide to ignore them, their meat is too precious to abandon.
Right.
So they said we raped them. They say we did something horrific to them. And then the lynching began. It's no different what we're seeing today in the 21st century with Bill Cosby.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, ABC, we got a phone call?
We had one. I think that we told everybody earlier that, you know, we were going to do it like, you know, I'm asking questions, you ask questions. Then, so I think people may have been waiting till the end. But we did have one earlier that it took the hand. Yeah, we can just put it out there now. So we're at the point where if you got a question, please call in at 712-770-4160. participant code 915-411-pound and then *61. Make sure you do that at the end there. That'll show me that you got a question. It looks like we got a caller that's there now. And just want to remind everybody that there's a couple things. One is, you know, we want to keep it tight. So you got maybe up to about a couple minutes to make your comment, ask your question. And then we'll have the guests answer, but we're going to have you on mute while the guest is answering the question. And also we want to, you know, make sure that we control the background noise. So be aware of that. So I'll go ahead and take this caller here, Joshua. Unknown caller, who's this?
Yeah, thanks, ABC Solution. How are you?
Mr. Solutions? All right.
All right, great, great. Good to hear you. Look, just two things about what your guest has said. I was under the impression that Mr. Cosby in the deposition admitted that he administered drugs to at least some of the women. And I don't know where his attorney was, but, you know, they opened that deposition up. That's where they got – that deposition was supposed to be a closed deposition. So, in essence, if that's true now, if and only if, then he convicted himself because he was administering drugs without a license. And they just drew the inference that he was doing that in order to rape the women. That's my number one statement. Number two deals with women having equal rights, how they can get away with what they do. They have equal rights, but yet they're considered victims. They're not held fully accountable as men. You have this problem that we have now. When a woman accuses a man, automatically we assume that she's telling the truth. Unless it's against Bill Clinton, then all of a sudden she's not telling the truth. But anyway, those are my two comments, and I would like to hear his comments toward what I said.
Right on.
Thank you so much, Solutions. No, Bill Cosby never admitted in his deposition that he drugged women to get sex. He talked about, they asked him in the deposition, did you ever give women drugs or unknowingly for sex? He said no. They asked him, did you ever have Quaaludes on you in the 70s? He said, yeah, in the 70s everybody had them, but I never gave them to women for sex. He said Quaaludes, if you go back and research, they're called disco biscuits. There was nothing that would make a woman lethargic. Every woman, if you was a celebrity in the 70s, and let's keep in mind, let's not forget the Rolling Stones, AC/DC, Jimi Hendrix, and the list goes on and on. All those people dealt with Aerosmith, with the Quaaludes. But Mr. Cosby never admitted to that. Yes, his deposition was sealed. Judge Rubino, the judge in federal court, said that after he gave the pound cake speech, the Associated Press spent a lot of money to get it unsealed. He said, I feel that he's a moralist. He's a moralist. Now, he was the one that sealed Mr. Cosby's deposition in 2005. But then in 2015, he said, I feel that he's a moralist. I'm going to unseal because of the pound cake speech. Well, the first appellate court came back and said that he was wrong for unsealing the deposition. It never should have been unsealed. Mr. Cosby wasn't a moralist. He just gave a speech. And they said the toothpaste is out of the tube, there's nothing you could do about it. So the deposition should have never been admitted into trial, and that's why we have now, that's why the State Supreme Court of Pennsylvania has agreed to review his appeal. And one of the things that they're looking at is the fact that the deposition should have never been unsealed, it could have never been admitted into trial. The 404B witnesses, the prior bad acts, the women should have never been admitted in the trial because in black and white in Pennsylvania law, it states that in order to be a 404B witness, you have to have similar and like interests of the accuser. No similar and like interests. And the third thing that they're looking at the Supreme Court of Pennsylvania, State Supreme Court, is that Mr. Cosby was given a deal by the district attorney that if he settled out of court, which he did for $3.8 million, that no charges would be filed. And that's to answer your question.
Right on. So we have another caller here. Let me open this one up. I believe this is JNYC.
Hey,
okay.
What's going on?
All right.
So is the story Bill Cosby, the whole show?
Yes. We're talking right. about Bill Cosby.
Right. We're talking about the trial. So that's okay. basically what we're talking about, yeah.
Right, right. So I got a couple of questions. You know, first of all, I just want to clarify. I think they did him dirty, but you know, I got a couple of questions. Right. One is, do you think that Bill Cosby contributed to his own demise in a way, as far as you know, back then, whether he was slipping pills or not, you know, dealing with you know, the women that he was dealing with, you know, or maybe feeling comfortable in the environment, even though the environment was, you know, if you want to say toxic for his situation. So when I ask that, I'm saying, you know, in regards to he's who he is at the time, but he's dealing in an environment where, yes, celebrities are, you know, they're mingling, doing what they're doing, and him, you know, being who he is, conscious enough to not dib and dab, and I'm not saying minus the drugs, just even in the circles of, you know, that he was in and dealing with these type of women, do you think that he contributed and partial to his situation or no?
Well, go ahead and finish off your questions or comments, Jay, and then, because what we're going to do after that, excuse me, is I'm going to mute you and we're going to take his answers. So go ahead, because you only got a couple minutes.
All right, cool. So, the other thing was, what was the other question? Okay, all right. So with him, this is not, I wouldn't even say that, is a question. The second thing would be like, you know, you have people that, and this is, you know, a well known that you have people on one side that say, well, he played this character that was fake. And then, so you have people that say that were upset and saying that he wasn't portraying the lifestyle that the average black man is living in America. And then you have some people, you know, that were mad that they were showing this fake or false life, supposedly. And then you have other people that say, well, you know, he was positive, that we loved his image. So you have two sides. Some people were mad and saying, well, he's portraying a fake side, or, you know, and then some people that did agree with the show and saying, well, yeah, they needed to put that type of, you know, imagery on television, some positive black man that's doing this type of work. And then you have people on the other side that say, oh, well, you know, he was portraying a false. So you have people that loved him and hate him, in a sense of, like, you know, it was like, whether he did, if he did gangster movies, then, you know, you have people saying, well, he was a gangster, he was portraying a bad character, here he is as a stereotype. And I leave it there. Good show, man, by the way, Yashua, ABC. I'll sit back.
Right.
Thank you.
Appreciate it, brother. All right, well, you got those questions?
I have those questions. First and foremost, you have to look at the era of Mr. Cosby coming up. You know, in the 60s, there were no black people as agents, publicists. They were all Jewish people. Paul Reiner, who just passed away on June 29th, a few days ago, discovered Bill Cosby. If you remember, his son is Rob Reiner, who played Meathead on All in the Family. Paul Reiner died at 98 years old. I remember the statement that Mr. Cosby talked about it today. He said that Bill Cosby can make anything funny. Well, you know, when you have that culture around you, there were no black people at that time who could make your career successful, who could make you a household name. You were engulfed with Jewish people who control the industry. So being in circles, that's common. That's part of the day-to-day of an entertainer to be in various circles, from the social scene to the entertainment scene to the party scene. Mr. Cosby, you can't find too many pictures of Mr. Cosby partying. You never saw that. Him and Mrs. Cosby got in the two-seater, drove to California, Hollywood, in the 60s, and they had a bag filled of Hershey candy bars. That's what they lived off of, driving in California. And he became a big name. iSpy took him to another level. So there was no way to separate yourself from white people. It was impossible. But because you did those things, it was part of the job. You know, since when have we seen that a person's lifestyle from a culture decades ago would come back to incarcerate them? Yes, there was a lot of infidelity, but since when has infidelity become a crime? You know, and as far as Mr. Cosby creating a fake character, what character on what TV show is actually real? When Norma Lear did The Jeffersons, Good Times, Archie Bunker, there's a great piece that you guys need to look up called Prejudice about Mr. Cosby that he did as a debate against All in the Family. He didn't like that show and the message that it was putting out. So he did a video call. He did an actual piece called, it's a 28 or 30 minute piece called Prejudice. He did also Lost, Stolen, and Strayed, Our History, with TBS. Mr. Cosby has always tried to put truth out about how we are people, are as a people. But there's no TV show that those characters, people look at them as themselves, so to speak. Mr. Cosby wanted to do a show, and that's why he created The Cosby Show, to give black people a greater image of who we are and what we are. If you look in history, there's a book called The Senator and the Socialite. And this was a guy who became a senator out of the Delta in Mississippi who was a sharecropper. And they owned properties in New York and Washington, D.C. And Mr. Cosby wanted to show black people their history of how we overcame slavery, how we overcame oppression. And that was the purpose of The Cosby Show. There were actual, in that era, in the 80s, there were families that no one probably knew about or probably saw that much of, that you had a wife who was an attorney and a father who was a doctor who lived in a middle-class neighborhood. That was prevalent. That existed in the 80s. It existed in the 70s. It existed in the 20th century. But as black people, we have to stop letting white people tell us how to hate, who to hate, and when to hate. But keep in mind, when their people get in trouble, they never let you hate their people, but they incite you to hate your own. I hope that answers your question.
Well, you know, brother, well, first of all, let me just say, I want to remind the callers, you know, we've got a limited amount of time, so if you got any questions, you want to call in now, it's 712-770-4160. Participant code 915-411 pound, and then star 61 if you have a question. But, you know, brother, I wanted to tell you first, you do an excellent job representing Mr. Cosby. As I listened to you and the question that was asked about, you know, the times in there and this kind of thing, if he maybe was caught slipping and got caught up or some stuff like that, you know, and everything that you just said, it reminds me or gives me the idea that, you know, Mr. Cosby is actually a very good example of black people in America. And what I mean is that, you know, you're born into an environment that's harsh and you're targeted as a black person, in particular as a black man. And, you know, you have to try to find a way in the world, regardless of that situation. So he does his thing, you know, I understand college and the football and all this stuff, but, you know, he decides to go into this entertainment field, which is totally controlled by white folks. And as you point out, in particular, the Jewish folks. So, you know, you mentioned earlier about this thing about, you know, it's like coming onto the block with the drug dealers, and this is my block, you know, so all of a sudden, this kind of thing. But he decides to come into this entertainment industry, which is white control, Jewish control, and he's got to figure out how to navigate through these things. And, you know, he's doing his thing. He's got his idea of what he wants to do, but he's doing what he has to do. I know he did some early movies where it was, you know, that conspiracy of black stuff. It wasn't like Superfly, I don't think. I don't remember those. But you know, it was the Cotton Comes to Harlem.
It was a black exploitation movie.
Right.
He did those for Sydney 48. Sydney 48 owned the rights to those movies. Let's Do It Again, Uptown Saturday Night. He did those. Sydney 48 directed Ghost Dad. He did it because of Sydney, but he still showed a character. He portrayed a character, Mungo Slade, and Richard Pryor played Sharp-Eye Washington, an investigator. You know, he did California Suites with Pryor, Alan Alda. You know, Mr. Cosby, as always, if you look at all of the films and the things that he participated in, there's only probably one film that he used the N-word. And I think that was Uptown Saturday Night, Let's Do It Again, but he never used it again in one of those films. You know, I was just reached out by Kenya Barris, who's doing a biopic on Richard Pryor, and he was like, look, I really need to talk to Kenya Barris. If people don't remember, he's the creator of the show Blackish and Mixish, and he said, I need to talk to Bill Cosby, because he said Bill Cosby is the one that they encourage Richard Pryor to stop being him. They encourage Richard Pryor to be a person, but just don't use the N-word. And, you know, he has made so many people careers. And you look at the cast of The Cosby Show and so many other people who didn't have careers. He stood by those individuals and continued to stand by those individuals. It's about propelling us as a people. And that's what The Cosby Show was all about. That's why all of his body of work, Fat Albert, you know, people – think about Fat Albert, but you got to remember all the other bodies of works that he did. Little Bill, when he gave us the cartoon, he gave us so many great things in power. Black people to give us a different imagery.
Well, let me finish this, and this is my point. You know, you do what you got to do to get in there and start, you know, get the knowledge and how to work the industry. And, you know, you already have in your mind how you want to play it, which is what you just talked about. You know, how he, okay, I'm going to get these different roles. I'm not going to go around being a drug dealer or something like this. But, you know, maybe I got to do I'm the brother on the street just talking that slang and all stuff. That's one thing. But, you know, my goal ultimately is to start to go in there and give a different image of black folks, you know, even if it's from the neighborhood and all this stuff. It ain't got to be I'm a drug dealer and I'm shooting people and all this stuff. You know, I can still show the humanity in black folks. And ultimately, down the road, you know, I want to get to where I'm showing here's some black folk that are educated and you know, they're raising their families and they're taking care of it. And then, you know, we just human beings. We just people that's living. You know, and show the humanity. And while I'm doing that, I'll show our art, our music, our culture, what we eat, and this kind of stuff. So, you know, it's going to take a little time, but if I can get in there to the point where I can actually have some influence, I can start to shape the images that are coming out in the media, as opposed to just, you know, Norman Lear and these white folks, these Jews, saying, hey, this is what black folks is, this kind of thing. It appears that that's what was going on. He was successful at it. And then, as you just mentioned, to the point that, you know, he talked to other brothers in the industry, because all the black folk in there were doing the same thing. You're getting in there trying to make your way and figure it out and all that stuff.
You're correct. You know, look, the white people had the Green Hornet, black. Bill Cosby gave us the Black Hornet. You know, what he did, he used his comedy. He used his talents to humanize all races, all religions, all genders, all ethnic groups, you know, and all religious groups. And it was about humanization of our people. And that's what's missing today.
You know, you don't see any shows humanizing us. You know, you look at social media, I tell everybody, yes, I never have a social media account. I never had a social media account because that's the social media was created to keep black people away from current events of the day. You know, it was created to give us quick sound bites. But we don't research anymore. We don't read. Like I said, if you don't want black people to read something, put it in a book. You know, and that's what they have done to us today with Bill Cosby, you know, the conviction, the allegations surrounding them. And we have to start taking the time to read the information for ourselves. I know it's difficult. A lot of stuff put out there. But, you know, we got to get back to the basics. Because, see, when you look at our generation today, and you look at this new generation that's forming, they have no one that they can inspire to be like. You know, Bill Cosby gave us something. He gave us the Cosby Show, but then he gave us a different world. He showed us that we do live in a different world, and we are different. But the difference, although we have different ways of learning, and there's a learning difference in all of us, we have the ability, because of our blackness, to be great. And that's who he is, that's what he was, and that's what he will continue to be.
Right on.
And it's a pleasure for me, position as a black man, he would be 47 on August 3rd, and Bill Cosby would be 83 on July 12th, to have the honor and privilege of telling his story, representing him, and correcting the wrong. You know, it was God's plan. I tell everybody, God has a plan. We don't know the plan. Now, Mr. Cosby was 100% blind. I always said that God didn't want him to have a vision to see where he was going to go to, that he wanted him to feel it. Because once he feel it, feelings are amazing. When we can feel it with the energy, the feelings is what invokes the change. It's not what we see. It's what we feel, what we experience. And this is just a new form of experience. Look, you got a man who has all the wealth, the great resources, and he's sitting in prison. However, you know, we wanted something different. Yes, we all would have wanted something different. However, this is our reality. And this is, in a sense, a blessing reality because it shows the people who don't have the resources and the income of Bill Cosby that if they want you, they can formulate a law and formulate a plan to take you down. So I would encourage people to continue to, you know, support us, continue to look at the facts. We don't want special favors. Look at the truth and facts, if allowed, and then make your decision and determination, but don't find it on social media. That's all that I
have. Well, hey, brother, we got another caller here that was trying to jump in, and I wanted to bring them in real quick. Go ahead, Allfax.
Yeah, hello, sir. How you doing today? My name's Allfax. It's a pleasure listening to you. I just have two quick questions, and I'll get out your way. I have a comment. First of all, I wish Bill Cosby well. He's impacted a lot of black African Americans, especially in the early 80s, well, late 80s, early 90s to go to college. A lot of people say that. So he did a lot for our community. And he encouraged people to do better in our community. But I have two questions. Did the court offer Bill Cosby home detention? And if so, did he deny it? Two, the black community is talking about reparations, you know, bills. It's the current, you know, talk in the black community. Does Bill Cosby talk about that? And what does he think about blacks one day getting reparations? Thank you, sir,
well,
and
first,
I appreciate it.
You
right.
Have a great day. We were told by Governor Wolf, Governor of Pennsylvania, Reverend Jesse Jackson, reached out to Governor Wolf. through various sources in the Pennsylvania legislature, and Governor Wolf gave us all indication that he's going to release and remand Mr. Cosby to house arrest due to COVID-19. The prison that he resides in right now is the more severely infected prison than all of the prisons in the state of Pennsylvania with COVID-19. I think a number of officers, correction officers, have passed away. A number of inmates have passed away. I think they have over 80 infections. They have given Mr. Cosby 3 masks to wear. He has to wash each mask out in his cell every night. He cannot social distance because he's 100% blind, so he has to rely on him for others. However, the governor gave us all indication, and then the governor reneged. When he put out his executive order, he put, if you're convicted of a sexual crime, I don't care if you're elderly, you cannot be released. He also put in his executive order that the district attorney who prosecuted you had to weigh in. Of course, they're going to be biased. So he even arranged for Reverend Jackson to have a private call with Mr. Cosby, and they had the private call. As I stated, the governor reneged on his agreement. As far as reparations, yes, we believe that everybody should get reparations. We hope that it happens to people of Tulsa, Oklahoma. I know they're working on that right now. But, you know, we've seen this picture. You know, the Holocaust didn't even happen in America, and Jews got reparations from America, and they've been given buildings and properties and all kinds of things as if the Holocaust happened on this land, which shows us that this is not our land. We're all foreign land as black people, as Israelites. However, we have to keep fighting, as Mr. Cosby would say, and we have to keep putting the truth out here and putting out who we are and what we are and our facts. And that's my answer to the question. And, you know, guys, I hate to do this, but I have another occasion I have to be at. So I don't
know. I do want to say before we let you go, Mr. Wyatt, I thank you again. Thank you very much for showing, for coming and sharing this perspective and this truthful, because a lot of people don't know some of the ins and outs of this trial and what took place in some cases. And so I thank you for that. And I also want to make, you know, and ask, I want to ask about his health. How was his health? Was he doing okay, et cetera? So those are things I do want to ask before I let you go.
Mr. Cosby is doing well as can be expected, as I stated. He's trying his best to stay healthy. He does over 300 sit-ups in his cell, 300 leg lifts. He went in at 220 pounds. He's at 183 now. He always laughs. He has not eaten any bread, any sweets right now because of COVID. The prison is giving him frozen food. He has to let the food unthaw for 3 hours before he can eat it. But he's trying to stay healthy. Last year he had two emergency surgeries. His carotid arteries on the left and right side had 90% blockage due to plaque buildup. They were both cleaned out. So he's trying to do as well as he can do. He's trying to eat as healthy as he can eat, and he tells the story of when he visited Nelson Mandela with Emmett Cosby. Their son was murdered, and Nelson Mandela had him and the family to come and spend time in South Africa, and he sat in the jail cell in Robben Island where Nelson Mandela was housed, and he said Nelson, in the morning, they would give him a tin cup of porridge, and they would put a piece of fat meat in the middle of the porridge, and Nelson would eat around the fat meat and save it as the last thing to eat because that was his protein. At lunch, they would give him the same tin cup of porridge, and they would put a sugar cube in it. Nelson would eat around that sugar cube and save it for his dessert. And then for dinner, they gave him the same tin cup of porridge, and they would put a piece of broccoli in there, and he would eat around the piece of broccoli and save that broccoli for his vegetable of the day. And Mr. Cosby, what he tries to do is put his food in a cup, and he rinses it off, channeling Nelson Mandela, and rinses the salt off of it, the sodium, so he won't have a stroke and his blood pressure won't shoot up. So he's trying to stay as healthy as possible. And we just continue to ask for your support, your prayers. We ask that, you know, your listeners, your people on YouTube, you know, put pressure on the governor, put pressure on these state Supreme Court judges to say, hey, you know, we want you to not just review his appeal, we want you to dissect his appeal, dissect it. And we want you to look at what was done, what was wrong, and what was wrong. And if not vindicate him, give him a new trial, one or the other, because he's our icon. See, we have to let white, we have to stop letting white people take our iconic figures away from us. No matter how we feel about them, yes, hey, who didn't, what man out here can say, I haven't.